Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of QS Cast. Tarkan and myself, Chaz, joining you. What's up, Tark?
Hey, how's it going, everybody? What's up, Chaz? Nice to chat with you
up,
again.
What's up, Tark? Always a pleasure.
Man, we've had a lot going on, and you had a quick flash cast last week, right? I wasn't around during the whole Dominaria craziness, but I think you guys had a cool little quick discussion about that stuff.
Yeah. So one of our writers, Pete, actually has joined me for a few of these. So I really appreciate him kind of giving me a quick turnaround there. We kind of quickly broke down. There was a lot of information, but I think we kind of parsed it as well as we could, in the time that we had. It was a really good cast. I hope people enjoyed that one because there was a lot to. I mean, there's still a lot to process, but I mean, at least with the additional time to kind of look things over, things become a little more clear, and we can kind of traverse the market a little bit better and just what to expect in standard and this and that and the other thing. So really glad that you can make it back, Tark. We have some interesting topics to talk about, one of which being Dominaria. Kind of, we want to have a little bit of a discussion, you and I. I think we should kind of talk about why you didn't get to make it last week. Things have been in the work for Ion and QS. You made an announcement last night, so kind of just run us through that because it's a pretty big deal, and I want folks to kind of grasp this from different angles.
Yeah, so I did do a post last night through Discord. We also tweeted it, but the fellas, Kelly, Tyler, the rest of the team are over at Gamma this week. If you guys don't know, Gamma is a huge tabletop retailer trade show, primarily business to business, mostly B2B focused. And something that we have not been able to talk about, but we announced last night, was we are partnering with TCG Player. So that now all Ion retail accounts, that is brick and mortar stores who use the Ion retail platform, which is our, I guess, our POS, the scanner. It's kind of, if you think of Crystal Commerce, it's sort of our version. We are now paired up with TCG Player in a partnership, and all inventory can be pushed to TCG Player from the Ion retail software. So, huge, huge partnership for us. Major boon to stores. If you guys remember last year, we were in Vegas, and a lot of the feedback we got from stores was that Ion Retail seems amazing and looks really awesome, but the number one question was, when is it going to push to TCG Player? Well, it now pushes to TCG Player. So there's been a lot of work on this front. A lot of resources have been allocated to building up this partnership and getting the sync going. And we're super excited. This is going to open up a lot of doors for the platform. It should really position us well in the marketplace. We're stoked. It's really big news. Now, how does this relate to Discord? How does it relate to QS subs? How does it relate to people who just use the scanner? Well, it's very important because as Ion sort of makes its way into the marketplace more and more, and there's more market penetration, the data integrity is going to be stronger and stronger. We're going to have a lot more data coming in. We're going to have in the centralized database that I've been talking about for a while is going to become more and more solid, and our numbers are going to be more and more correct. So this is going to have a trickle-down effect, I assure you, into what kind of data, how good the data is in the scanner, what kind of data is put in there. We're hoping to have more merchants that come into the scanner. We'd love to have some Ion retail merchants begin to be placed into trader tools for scanner data and as official merchants. So there's a lot of ways that it's going to affect QS and the scanner. So I understand that people think, well, this doesn't directly affect me. I'm just going to keep on using my scanner and whatnot. But it will affect you in the long term because we're going to have a lot more data coming in, a much bigger pool of data. And hopefully we're going to get more merchants into the scanner. So, it's a big deal, guys. And it's very big for the company. So if you think, okay, in one segment of the company, if we ramp up a lot of business, it's going to have positive effects on QS and on the basic scanner user. This is not going to negatively impact QS. We don't expect to suddenly shut down QS and just become an Ion retail business. You guys don't have to worry about that happening. We don't plan on on firing any writers because, you know, well, we're done with QS. None of that's going to happen. So you guys don't have to worry about that. This is only a net positive and a boon for the business. So it really is a big deal, guys. Simply saying the TCG player is now, you know, a business partner is really, really huge for us in the marketplace. So it's very exciting. I know you guys may think, well, this seems like it doesn't affect me directly, but it really is good for us and it's going to be good for you guys down the road. So very, very exciting.
You know, and this partnership made sense, right? I mean, in the sense that, you know, their scanner was kind of limited to their own framework and Ion kind of had this broader reach. So I think it was like a long time coming that these, you know, instead of kind of doing two different things, I think coming together and partnering was the kind of best case scenario here.
Yeah. And I'm going to state this and I'm sure people can interpret as they will, but let's just say that plenty of feedback we received was that there was a deep need for another POS solution. I'm sure you guys can decipher what that means, but we're very, very excited. TCG player is very excited. Good. This is going to be all good things, guys. So I just wanted to kind of give you an explanation. I know it was like 1 a.m. People were kind of like grumpy because I was blasting everybody at 1 a.m., but I thought it was important and I wanted to do it. It was timely. I wanted to make sure it got out in time. So I do apologize if anybody got pinged with that, but it is very relevant information. And so that's where we're at. So good stuff. Good stuff. You want to chat more about Dominaria now, or do you want to talk about
Thunderstorm?
Actually, wait. I'm sorry. Hold on. I got one thing I want to say before we go into that. Chaz, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Can you please tell me how Jace is doing in Modern now? Because I'm just curious as to what your thoughts are now that we are 4 months. I think we're 4 months now into the meta, and you got pretty livid last time. So I just want to see what your position is on Jace.
Well, listen. Like I kind of ended my whole rant in saying I don't care either way, but it doesn't seem like there's any super negative impacts yet. And the big emphasis is yet and so far and for now. So, I mean, when you think about it, we don't really have that long of a time frame for these two cards to be in the format. I mean, there needs to be a longer amount of time, especially in Modern, for things to kind of, you know, either take over or become a problem. I know Dredge at one point really became a problem immediately, and I don't really want to directly compare it to that, but that was kind of a perfect storm for Dredge to be good. I mean, they just printed a whole bunch of stuff in Shadows over Innistrad, then they unbanned Golgari Grave Troll, and Dredge is just like this tier zero, super overpowered ability. I mean, Jace and Bloodbraid, they're already making their presence known. I mean, let's not make it seem like they're not doing nothing. Bloodbraid Elf is definitely doing strong things, and Jace is already seeing play. So are they taking over the format yet? No, but I think they're doing good things so far, at least.
So what you're basically saying is I was right.
For now, yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, so a dead clock is right twice a day. I mean, if you want me to say that. Yeah, you're only right until you're wrong. I can say the sky is blue until it's not. So yeah. So far, I will say this though. Them unbanning Jace, saved Masters 25, so you know there's that at least, and that was kind of my whole skeptical thing about it. But you know, there's that.
Yeah, look, here's the thing. We were talking about this, and frankly, I said this before. I think Masters 25 is a great Masters set. I think they found their rhythm. I think the EV, Saffron did the EV. It's like foils. You're at around $200. You're variants of the foils are like 180, 185. That's fair. That is fair, guys. And you have to realize, I mean, my growing issue with the master sets is everybody's like, oh, wow, these things suck because there's no money to be made. It's like, it's not, these things don't exist for you to make money on them. They exist for stores that boxes, steel product. I know it's a big box, but it's, you know, they're created for players and they're created to get more reprints out there And they found, I feel like they found a nice equilibrium between balancing the EV and getting some solid reprints. I mean, the commons and uncommons, right? We've got a lot of first-time foils. So that's good. I think this is perfectly fine. Yeah, you're not going to be able to buy boxes on a master set, but if you shouldn't be thinking that you're going to be able to do that anyway. Those days were long gone. So I feel like Masters 25 is good. I personally think it's better than Iconic Masters. I know, Chaz, you kind of have different
feelings. It's like barely better. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think this is a great baseline to say, okay, this is kind of how Master sets moving forward are going to look, right? And I think it's perfectly fine. I think this is a good set. And I think it's achieving what it needs to achieve. And I personally am very satisfied with it. The finance people that are grumping about it, I mean, hey, too bad. These sets really aren't, nothing's really for us, right? We benefit off of the secondary effects of what happens when we do what we do, but these aren't designed to try and for people to make money, right? They're just not. So yeah, I think Masters 25 is great. I think people have had, you know, people have had success selling their boxes at a decent enough price. And yeah, I think it's good. I think it's good.
So I still have a couple like mixed feelings about that. And I get where you're coming from. I don't think they're going to continue to model the master sets, especially, you know, back-to-back master sets like this, kind of having a not-so-good reception or not the best reception. I mean, we look at Modern Masters, what was it, 2017? That was a master set that everyone seemed to really like. They had some high-powered reprints in there. They really had some selling points like Liliana of the Veil, what have you. I just don't think, like, if they wanted this to be there, I can get that they wanted to kind of move to this very fair master sets where they're not oversaturating and there is still some value in there. But I just don't think that's going to be the case. I think they're going to look back on these two and say, well, we tried to do this. You know, it was back-to-back master sets. Folks did not like it very much. And, you know, I get that aspect. I also get the store aspect, and you always want to like look out for the local gaming stores and you don't want to like mess them over. But at the same time, I mean, if you're, and this was being like very conservative numbers, I mean, if you're still drafting these at like 25, even at like $25 a draft, I mean, you're still making over $200 just in the draft from the, just from the draft. I mean, I know you have to like pull out prizes and stuff, but I mean, these were not really made to, you know, they're just not pushing out a product that you're going to try to sell these boxes for like $250 anymore.
Right. And
that was their goal. That was their goal. I don't think they're going to continue to do that, because I do think like Iconic Masters, regardless of the drafting, and I'm sure some stores made back some of their losses with the drafting and that and what have you at like $30, $35 or whatever they charge. But I just don't think Wizards is going to continue to use that kind of that set model going forward, especially. It was just not well received. I know you and I can look at this and, you know, we're trying to look at it from every lens. I mean, from someone in the finance, you know, that's interested in the finance aspect, not as a retail store, but just as like an individual. I mean, why am I looking at these? I don't even honestly care what's in the set. I care in the sense that I want to know what is reprinted. I want to know what to stay away from. But in all honesty, two Masters sets back to back, I mean, we've already seen some massive price increases in the market, and that's exactly what we were said that was going to happen. So there is still a net positive to all this, is that Masters sets, they do provide reprints, and I know like one of our insiders, Efren, was talking about that. That's like their goal, to provide cards that are reprinted and affordability and accessibility. And it still does that, because anything that's reprinted in these sets, I mean, automatically almost half their price or more. I mean, you look at cards like Imperial Recruiter, that was like a $200 card only because it was just so rare and it was like from Portal 3K. So on that end, they're still doing their job, but they do need to. I do think they kind of fell short on some of the things that they could have included in these two master sets that just kind of desperately needed a reprint at this point. But I mean, I can understand kind of every angle. I mean, we're trying to look at it from every angle, but from a finance perspective, I mean, if you're looking at this from a financial perspective, I get like the store aspect of not, you know, of having this product rot on your shelves is never a good thing. But from an individual perspective, I mean, I think this was great. I mean, the less that are the less cards that are in there that are reprinted, the less I have to worry about, you know, running, you know, back from my job or whatever the very next day that night and putting in a buy list and hoping to get this stuff out. And, you know, there's just so many cards to look at now that haven't been reprinted. One of them I'm going to talk about, because one of them I was going to talk about and already, you know, increased in price. So, I mean, it does spark a spending in the marketplace, which is ultimately a good thing for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, and that's you touched on exactly the second point I was going to make. And actually, Jay Temkin in the Discord kind of, he's saying a similar thing in another way. But if they load when they load the sets with like hard tournament staples like Masters 2017 was, then that's not really good for finance people. It's better these sets when they're done like this. Nothing like no critical reprints, right? Because that gives all the old, that gives stuff like Dark Confident, hint hint, which is now just, you know, been going up and up, gives it a chance to grow, right? So if they chalk these boxes full of value, as Jay Temkin said, then there's nothing really hot to spec on. But now, and I said this before, now there's so many things that weren't reprinted, there's all kinds of targets. And again, there's plenty of evidence to suggest that we're not going to get another Masters set for the rest of the year, and hopefully not through early of 2019. There's plenty of room for tons of stuff to grow. There's plenty of things to speculate on now. So I feel like a lot of the complaints about these recent Masters sets are a little short-sighted. And, you know, I get it. Masters 2017 was amazing. It was chock full of stuff. And I'm sure they'll go down that road again at some point. But I kind of like the cadence they're developing with these Masters sets, in which you get some cool stuff, you get lots of good commons and uncommons, but then there's plenty of stuff left over. There's plenty of meat left on the market bone, I guess, to make it a cheesy metaphor.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, there's all kinds of things for you guys to go after. So,
Go ahead.
I'm just saying, from that perspective, I think these are actually successful from a finance perspective.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, there's still opportunities even with reprints. I mean, Efren pointed out again, I mean, yeah, absolutely. You can, you know, look to buy into reprints at their lows. And if they're a reprint with a lot of interest in it or see a lot of play, they do rebound. So there is that aspect, but you know, that's still a small percent, you know, that's still a small part of all this. I mean, there's so many other moving parts to master sets and reprints and kind of looking from this in all those different lenses. So I don't get it. Like for me, I don't touch sealed product at all. So except for like Commander stuff, because I just personally like that. Some of them have been you know, worthwhile, but most of the time not. So I don't see that aspect of like, except if you're a store and you have to like fill you know, orders and you have to have the stock. I don't know why anyone is even looking at these in, you know, that way. I can get it. If you're a player and you were anticipating a lot of, you know, reprints like, you know, Celestial Colonnade and stuff like that, where all these cards are like very expensive because they have not seen a reprint. That is the valid argument, and that I can understand. And I agree with you. I don't think Masters 25 and Iconic Masters hit the mark as much as they could have on that front. I mean, did they bring down the total cost of a lot of different cards? Like, yes, if you look through, they might not be bona fide tournament staples, but you look at a card like Oriok Champion. I mean, Oriok Champion was a $20 card, folks. I mean, you know, you don't realize some of these cards are like $20 cards. Archangel of Thune was like $20 for no reason. Are they bona fide tournament staples? No, but they still provide accessibility to these certain cards in these sets. But, you know, I think they tried to find a happy medium, you know, and this is kind of just closing the book on these now that they're both like kind of out there and Masters 25 is about to drop. I think they tried to find the happy medium between Iconic, like what Iconic Masters and Masters 25 were trying to do. And like you said, Tarkan, like jam packing a Masters sets like Masters 2017, which is all this stuff. I think they were trying to find a happy medium and, you know, they came a little short. I mean, I think that is it. You know, an outrage? I don't think so. I think they were two fine sets that did not have too much upside, but still like kind of did what they were there to do. So
yeah,
that's all we can really expect.
Yeah, my position, I'm a little bit more positive on it. I think that if you switch Tree of Perdition, is it Perdition or Tree of whatever it is? Tree of Perdition.
Tree of Redemption.
Yeah, whatever. If you switch the bulk tree with something that was like, you know, really exciting,
at this point.
And I think that would have probably, you know, made people a lot more happy. But otherwise, I think it's fine. I think it accomplished exactly what it needed to do.
Yeah. I mean, if you anyway, Masters 25 had a really strong rare slot on an uncommon slot. Like, I know that's not like the selling point of PAX. People are not like, oh, like, look at all these awesome uncommons. But they are there. I mean, they were strong enough, you know, to say, hey, listen, there's still a lot of value in here. I mean, Filter Lands, like Coalition Relic, Azusa, like all that stuff is still really good.
Yep.
And the Watermark Foils was kind of like the gimmick there. So, you know, you still have worthwhile stuff. Okay, so back to Dominaria. Pete and I talked about, you know, the actual cards. We kind of want to try to go through them a little bit. We talked about some of the kind of ripple effects. We're actually seeing a little bit of that already. Some stuff based on Saproling, some stuff based on Dragons. So this really does touch a lot of different corners of the market. And while some of them do feel like niche, I do still feel that even though they're niche, they will garner some interest. I mean, the Saproling stuff, you know, Tarkin and I were kind of evaluating some cards. We have some cards to discuss here in a minute to try to keep the, you know, podcast structure the same. But, you know, some of this stuff is just very scarce at this point. And they didn't have a reprint, and that's, you know, still a, you know, good opportunity there, regardless if it's a niche or not.
Yeah, I mean, Dominaria has been, so I've been thinking about this a little bit.
You were really in on Dominaria. So how do you feel so far? I mean, we got privy to I mean, in a bad way, obviously you don't want this to happen, but you are now privy to a lot of cards, Tark. So what do you feel?
Yeah, so I was beating this drum. Yeah, I was really, really excited about it. I feel like it is the home run they wanted it to be as far as the nostalgia and the marketing. I think this captured the 25th anniversary branding in a way that Masters 25 didn't do as well. I think this is much, much more successful and it's a home run in that regard. That it's clearly skewed casual, very clearly skewed casual. And so like, it's really hard to see how, I mean, there's some blatantly obvious impacts, tournament impacts, like with Land of War Elf, right? Like, okay, Land of War Elf's obviously going to be huge in standard. But like a lot of this other stuff, like the sagas, you know, I don't see any of these sagas. They're really hard to kind of gauge, right? Like, I don't see it as many of them as being very good. I don't see a lot of this stuff having a huge impact on standard right now. It's just really difficult to gauge. I think Karin is better than everybody thinks it is. I think the pre-order price of $32 is not a good speculator point, but I think it's a very fair price point for where this card's probably going to end up. I suspect it has a good chance of going to like $40. And I think there's some other stuff. The Mox is overpriced and it's probably going to stay overpriced because it's a Mox, but I don't think it's very good. I think that Jaya, which is the Sig's favorite plane, Sig's favorite card, right? The Jaya Ballard or whatever, the three red, one other Planeswalker, I think it is, or three red, two other Jaya Ballard. Yeah. I think that Planeswalker is very bad. I don't think that's going to impact standard. So, the Czech lands are probably going to be around $3. Like that's common for the land cycle like this, but the rest of this stuff is really hard. It's really hard for me to gauge. So I think from a 25th anniversary perspective, home run. Skewed very casual, so how this is going to impact competitive play is difficult to predict. I'm personally having a hard time. Maybe you that brew a lot more or have like just gone off with it and are seeing a lot. Outside of like Karn, Land of War Elf, obviously, and some of the stuff that seems like it's not very good. I'm kind of having a rough time with this one as far as like, you know, how it's going to impact tournament. Now, I think the sagas are awesome. I think the sagas are the new design. Just like invocations, I think everyone's complaining. Everyone's like they suck, they're gross. I think it's one of those situations where long term down the road, people are going to be like, "Wow, this thing that was once not cool is kind of cool," and they're going to be very popular in casual kitchen table circles. So we need to see how the prices shake out after pre-order. But I think those are very, very interesting as far as like casual. Whether or not they, you know. I feel like they need to print The other thing with sagas is I don't think they're going to print any more of them in anytime soon. I think those were a special one-off with this set, which to me makes them more interesting, as I believe they're going to be kind of a limited thing. So I think those are important to look at from a long-term kind of perspective. But for tournament stuff, I don't know, Chaz. Are you seeing stuff besides obviously like Land of War Arn, but are you seeing stuff that's like super interesting for tournament play?
Yeah, I do think there's some interesting stuff here. I mean, well, yeah, outside of Land of War really kind of opening up Standard and kind of taking over Standard, which I do think it's going to leave its mark immediately.
Absolutely.
Karn,
I think the dinosaur deck is actually could actually be viable. Yeah. I mean, any deck that plays green is Standard could potentially get a boon from.
I don't have the rarity, but I liked tried to go back through this a few times. I liked Steel Leaf Champion. I don't know. That could be, honestly, I think it could be an uncommon, but it feels like a rare. The Triple Green Elf Knight, it's a 5/4, can't be blocked by creatures of power 2 or less. I mean, obviously I'm biased towards a certain color, but that is just really, that's a really strong card. And a turn 2 Steel Leaf Champion will be very scary. I mean, it's going to be happening, and I think it's going to be happening a lot. You can either go turn 2 Steel Leaf Champion, or you can go turn 2 Ronas the Indomitable, followed by this, and that's going to be a really scary start. So that is definitely one I kind of honed in on. I don't know. I think like the one store that has pre-orders at this point is Channel Fireball, but honestly, yeah. I would not even be engaging in like pre-orders, even like kind of the method that I've started to adopt, because it's just I like to have the visual, like the card, the visual, the art, like the I don't want just blank templated cards, and especially because it's still, I don't even think outlet like eBay will let you this far out from the release. I think it's like 30 days at the very least. So I would just hold off on going deep on with Channel Fireball having pre-orders. I wouldn't go crazy yet, but there's definitely a few cards in here that I think will be good out of the gate, and especially in foil. Like you looked at I think there's going to be some build around cards. There was the Saproling. What was he's like something the Stowaway.
The black green one, the 3-drop.
It's a black green drop. Yeah, you got Slimefoot the Stowaway. I think that's going to be an interesting build around card, similar to like a Patra. I think it's already starting to kind of affect the market a little bit in terms of people trying to buy stuff in anticipation for this card. We had another. I'm trying to pull it up here. It was like a bug, Sultai commander. Let me see really quick. Sultai commanders are usually really, really well received. Yeah, Moldothra, the Gravetide. During each of your turns, you may play up to one permanent card from each permanent type from your graveyard. I mean, that's just insane. So, it's a 6-mana 6/6. I think foils will be very interesting, but yeah.
There's a saga that is interesting to me, and I kind of want to know your perspective on it, which is the green one, Song of Frailes, which is the 2-drop, and when it's like it enters play, it gets a lore counter, right? And which it allows all your creatures to tap for any color mana, and then it gets another lore counter in your next draw step, and you get the same ability, and then on the third one you get a +1/+1 counter on everything, and then they have like what's like Vigilance, Trample, Indestructible. I don't know how relevant those abilities are, and that ability isn't standard to generate, like have a bunch of mana dorks on the board, but that seems kind of interesting considering it's mana of any color. Again, I just like the fact that it's a 2-drop, so it's cheap. Not saying it's going to do anything, but that's kind of interesting to me. Chaz, what do you think? Does that seem like it could be something that might be good?
I do think it can be good. I don't, it's just the problem is I don't know, like, the curve is so much different now. I think you want to be like aggressive. So I just don't know. Right. Like you don't want to play this turn 2 anymore because Llanowar, you want to be playing 3-drops.
Right, right.
On turn 2. So
it clearly feels like it's a combo-y sort of.
It is. And like, it's just going to be hard now because two converted mana cost cards have to be really good to even consider them, because I want to be playing Jade Light Ranger on like turn three. So yeah. I want to be playing, you know, Deathgorge Scavenger or Ronus or what have, or the 5/4 on turn three. Like, I don't want to, you know, tap two, then have a mana left over and play Song of Freelies. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I guess the point is I think that the sagas, the cheaper they are, the more opportunity they're going to have as far as their mana cost. And then this allows you the opportunity to generate, you know, you could generate a bunch of mana. I don't know if there's anything there, but these are the kind of things I would be looking at. Somebody in the Discord, Jay Temkin, said the Armageddon one. I don't know. What isn't that one pretty expensive?
What is that one again?
I don't
refresh my memory.
Either.
It's a saga?
Yeah, there's a...
Fall of the Thrawn?
It's a 6-mana Geddon that allows people to return lands from their graveyard.
I mean,
battlefield.
It's just the problem is like that's probably a good sideboard card in long drawn out games. But I mean, you really kind of have to establish your board before you do this. And then if you've already had an established board, like, what are you playing this for?
But then they get their lands back. Like, they're still allowed to get lands back, right? So
two back and then two back again.
Yeah. I just...
And then it dies.
Yeah,
so,
I don't know.
I'm not... Yeah.
I'm not seeing that one.
Oh, an EDH. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good spot.
Right. So again, I want to reiterate that this set is... It's very clearly casual and EDH and kitchen table focus. So that's... I mean, a ton of this stuff is awesome in EDH and in the kitchen table. It's just how this is going to impact standard remains to be seen, and it's a little difficult to predict with these cards. So I don't know. I really think Karn is damn near underrated. I think Karn is awesome. I don't know why people think it's not good. I think it's excellent. I think it's could see multi-format play. And I would not be surprised if it ends up in a tier one standard deck and ends up being like $40 Chandra. I just don't see any reason that won't happen. Possibly more because it's Karn, but $40 probably is, you know, seems fair. So I think that the pre-order price, while I wouldn't be paying that to spec on it or whatever, I think that's a reasonable price that it's likely going to end up around maybe 25, you know, as the supply heats up. And then I don't think it's going to drop more than that. So, and stay away from the mocks. That's the cards just... It's not going to be very good, and it's a mock, so it's not going to drop in price much.
So are the rarities, I'm seeing them on a couple sites, are these, like, known? Did I miss that in
these
the
are,
text document? Or are these estimates?
That's a very good question. I don't know, actually.
Best guesses, okay. Because I was going to say, I mean, I'm sure all the legendary stuff, like Moldothra, the Gravetide, and stuff like that are probably mythic, but
some Planeswalkers are mythics for sure.
Yeah, Planeswalkers are mythics for sure. But I mean, because I was just looking at one of the spoiler sites, and, you know, Steelleaf Champion was an uncommon. I mean, that's definitely a possibility. I even said that right from the start. Like, this could be an uncommon, but it feels like a little bit of a rare. But if that's the case, then I would stay away, obviously, if it's an uncommon.
I think Llanowar, I think it's a strong case for Llanowar Elf being on.
Maybe.
But who knows?
Yeah.
Tough to say, I guess. Who knows?
Phyrexian Scriptures was rare, but spoiled as mythic. Right. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So, you know, these sagas, again, are very interesting. I don't know if we're going to be anytime soon, particularly with this unique design template. Good in EDH. So, yeah, foils for sure, keep your eye on. And, you know, these could be a very limited thing. And I know everybody thinks a lot of people think they're ugly and this and that, but, you know, they're super unique. And if they don't do them again for a while, then, you know, they could be good pickups.
Are you leaning towards masterpieces or no, Tark?
I'm not on masterpieces. I don't think they're going to
be. You don't think they're in there? Yeah, that definitely opens up a lot of more possibilities if there's no masterpieces, because obviously that's great. If there is, I think there's still a lot of opportunity, but, it's tempered. But
yeah.
Still, like, when you have such a jam-packed, like, legendaries and all these, stuff for EDH, I mean, foils are still going to be great. But we did see, like, I mean, we're going to talk about a couple of the cards, but they do... like repress some of the and keep some of the prices of these down for a very long time, even on like some of the more popular EDH stuff. Like, there's just so much stuff, but if there's masterpieces, it really wouldn't matter. You know, some of this stuff would break through, but a lot of it would stay fairly, you know, down for a long time. No masterpieces in FAQ. Yeah, but that's not necessarily a telltale.
I think there's enough evidence for me to side on them not being in the set, in my opinion. Which I really hope they're not, because that allows some of these more interesting cards. I think they really shouldn't be, because if they're not in here, then that leaves plenty of room for a lot of interesting things to happen with these values of some of these cards. But you're absolutely right. If there's masterpiece.
Oh, okay. So they released the FAQ because there was a leak. They could have omitted stuff from this FAQ. The other FAQs did include masterpieces, but they didn't have like the entire set spoiled. they didn't have like massive leaks on those cards or on those sets. From what I remember, anyway. I mean, this was like pretty bad. I mean, this is almost like, you know, New Phyrexia bad. So they kind of just had to release something, and they could have easily omitted them from the FAQ and then released them later in a separate document. I mean, there's or just a more comprehensive FAQ once the set releases. I mean, they could have done so many different things. Yeah, it's not necessarily the final notes of the card or of the FAQ. They could have just pushed this out, omitted a lot of stuff because they didn't want us to know that there was masterpieces in it, and give us everything. And there's so many different things that could have happened. Like, yeah, it's a strong argument, but it's not. I think in this particular case, it's not, you know, definitely the telltale. Yeah, so I think that's about it for Dominaria Tark. I mean, I know the more interesting stuff is what has come of this so far. So I think it's more prudent to talk about what we wanted to talk about this week. So over the last, I mean, I tried to send out an email. I mean, Pete and I tried to do some really quick evaluations. But since then, I mean, we've seen some interesting movement in the marketplace. The first kind of card that we wanted to bring up, I mean, we talked about Namata Grove Guardian last cast. I mean, we're just talking about like Saprolings and a lot of different cards to consider, because there's such a broad spectrum of, you know, different creature types and different archetypes that Dominaria is going to try to hit a lot of different corners of the Magic universe. We brought up Namata Grove Guardian, brought up Kangi, but I did see some movement on cards like Thelon of Havenwood.
Yep.
And it's kind of funny because Tarkin and I were reminiscing about this card from a while back. This card got some, you know, saw some pretty big interest in the Tiny Leader kind of fiasco. Yeah, like and
three years ago now, I think. Two or three years ago now.
I think it's like 3 years ago now, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's important, Chaz, to note that, you know, a set like this that's built around nostalgia and throwback, you know, I think it's more critical to look at the cards from the past that might be impacted, like you're saying. So, some really weird ones like, was it three? Yeah, Thraven, right? Was it Thraven? Thelon. Yeah, which the problem with these Saproling ones is that the Saprolings are so bad that I don't, you know... Saproling decks are probably very, very corner case and niche community that just love their Saproling decks. I mean, the Saproling is so horrible. So, you know, I don't know how aggressive I would be on the Saproling cards, but, you know, Thelon is, I mean, that card is so random. It's such an old, you know, I mean, that one's not getting reprinted anytime.
I mean, it's not old, but it's old now.
I mean, it's Time Spiral. That's old.
Yeah, it's like pretty old now.
Yeah. So
it's not like Invasion or your what have you, where it's like even. You know, Time Spiral is getting there. Tendersuit Dryad, that's an interesting one. I do like that.
But again, like I'm saying, I would just be careful with these specific. They're just they're not very good, and I don't know how wide of an audience things carry. You know, like I don't know how pop. If there was something for Slivers, right, I would be like, oh my gosh, this is a slam dunk.
I think there's Slivers. I do think there's a market for like. Fungus
Saproling?
And Saproling for, and stuff.
Fungus and Saproling audience?
I do think like there's enough. I mean, people like these quirky like tribes that never get any love. Homerids get no love. You got Homerids, and so
yeah, Homerids are worse than Saproling.
Going back through again, so you know, we talked about last week like Darigaz the Ignited. I have seen some of the other. There was that first kind of cycle of them in Invasion, and then there was like the second kind of cycle of them in the planes in the what was it, the Planar Chaos, yeah, that those sets. I have seen foils of like Teneb the Harvester, other dragons of that cycle start to increase, and this is kind of what I'm talking about. I mean, there it was a $15 foil. The card has been pretty stagnant for very long, for quite a while. Then it got that reprint. Then it's like kind of increasing again. Normals are at a $1.50, somewhere around there. But foils have been pretty steady. Haven't really got, they weren't affected at all by the reprints at all. I mean, it wasn't reprinted in foil. So, and I don't think they will be reprinted in foil anytime soon still. So yeah, maybe some room there.
I mean, dragons as a super type, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, it's like
that's
touching.
It has a huge audience, so yeah, no.
It really does.
There's a clear argument for that.
Yeah, someone, I actually really like this one. Someone brought up in chat, Hakon. Oh, man, it's like Stormgald, or I have to, this guy.
Yeah.
Hakon Stormgald, yeah, from Scourge. Man, this hasn't been touched in a long time. In response to some of the graveyard cards, I mean, the one that touched on, Moldothra, the Gravetide. Yeah, cold stat. Yep. So this card hasn't been reprinted in a very long time. It's sitting around normals of like $3 to $4. I think foils are in the, let's see, like the, it's a knight. Oh, so it also has other implications because there's some knight stuff in there. Yeah, because we did talk about what is it? Supreme Exemplar? Something like that? The knight? What's the knight lord, Tark? Exemplar. Knight Exemplar? Knight Exemplar. That's right in the name. But yeah, I do like that one too. It hasn't been reprinted in a while or at all. And the foils have been pretty steady at 10. Interesting. All right, so Tark has to leave here in a minute, so we're going to try to wrap this up. So Tark, let's just go through the cards that we wanted to talk about for this week and then kind of wrap things up. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, I was looking on interest a little earlier. I noticed the god had seen just a slight gain, and it kind of got me thinking about the gods again. And I went and looked, and I noticed that both Atheros and Erebos are the foils and the non-foils, but particularly the foils are significantly less than Purphoros. Purphoros is sitting at around $33. Both Erebos and Atheros are about $15 foils, $16 foils. Atheros is played in, I think...
So Erebos is... Atheros is 30. Like in the 30-35 range.
The foil.
Yeah, but it's
the non-foil. Excuse me, the non-foil. Right, sorry, right, excuse me. Atheros non-foil is about $8. Erebos foil is about $15, and the non-foil I think is like $6 or something like that. And I compared these to Purphoros, right? So Purphoros is in about 900 decks, I think. Atheros is played in more decks than Purphoros. Erebos is played in only, I think, a third less. Less than a third, fewer decks than Purphoros. So I think that these price gaps are a little skewed. So I think there's good room for Erebos to end up probably, I would say it could hit $30, $30 in foil, and I would say probably around $12 non-foil. Atheros, I definitely think could be around $12 as a non-foil, $15 as a non-foil. So those are actually my two non-reserve list picks this week.
I think you're flipping them. I think you're mixing them up. Yeah.
I'm sorry, because there was a lot of data. Yeah. Let me look. I'll pull it up on TCG Play right now to confirm all this, you guys. So
yeah,
Atheros,
I think you're just flipping them.
Hang on one second, guys. Sorry, I just want to make sure my numbers are correct. Okay. So I'm looking at Atheros here. Yes. So the non-foils are about $9. Okay. The foils are like $30. So I think that the non-foil Atheros could get up to about the $15 range. I think that's perfectly reasonable because it's played in more decks than Purphoros. Purphoros is currently sitting at a $30 foil and around $12 to $15 non-foil. So I think Atheros non-foil has room to get to $15. Erebos, I think the foil is at about $15. I think that foil has room to get up to $30. Okay. And I think that where's the non-foil? Non-foil is at $6, right. So I think that there's probably, I would say, $12. Almost a double up, I would say, is fair for Erebos as well. So I think both Erebos and Atheros, Atheros in non-foil, Erebos in foil and non-foil, all of those have rooms to grow. And again, I use Purphoros as a baseline. I understand Purphoros is a favorite as a combo piece, but when I look at the decks that these cards are played in and the fact that Erebos and is such a favorite commander or god in commander, as well as Athreos, I think there's a lot of room there. So those two, I also like, we had discussed Omnoth, Locus of Rage from Battle for Zendikar. The foil is sitting at $6, and it's one of the top played commanders in EDH. I understand that there's a supply glut, but I think $6 is a little too low. I think you can probably see, I don't think $12 is unreasonable for that in foil. The non-foils is really tough because, I mean, there is just, that's just the bulkiest of bulk mythics, but I don't see, I mean, it's about a dollar, but I don't see why, I shouldn't say bulkiest of bulk mythics. It is a dollar mythic, therefore it's not true bulk, but it's very low due to the supply. So I don't think that the non-foil will have as much room to grow, but I think $3 is fair, but I think the foil can end up being around $12. I know there's a lot of supply, but if you look at TCG players, is sell inventory, there's only like three pages. There isn't a lot of foil supply out there. So I like that one. And of course, I have a reserve list pick. This week, it's going to be, where is it here? Let me find it. It is Weathersea Treefolk, Urza Legacy Foil. It was on market. It saw market gains, the market price gains on interest for last week, grew about 17%. It's only at $30. I think that's easily a $50 to $60 foil. It's a reserveless foil. I've seen Weathersea Treefolk, both a non-foil on buy list, growing. I saw it on Card Kingdom. I've seen it in Magic.cards through Trader Tools as well. So, yeah, I really like Weathersea Treefolk, and I think around between $50 to $60 is probably a price point to put that one at. So that's me this week, Chaz.
Yeah, so I was going to talk about Daybreak Coronet. I know there was some discussion on Discord. That has fully taken off and not one I'm going to talk about. But the next best thing, I do think, is Core Spirit Dancer, since everyone's playing Boggles right now. Core Spirit Dancer has pretty much dodged a substantial reprint and has been one of those cards that has rubber banded a lot back, you know, in the course of history of modern, between, you know, anywhere from 15 back to 6 back to near 20 back to like under 10. So I think it's sitting at a pretty good spot right now. I think it's like in the 6 or 7 range. And like I said, it hasn't been really, it hasn't had a really substantial reprint. It had a Plane Chase printing and then a Commander Anthology printing. And I think that's actually less than what Daybreak Coronet has at this point. So, yeah, I really like Core Spirit Dancer. It's like the one of the, you know, with Daybreak Coronet, it's the like the key parts of the deck of Boggles and or Bogles or whatever you want to call it. And I do think it's probably time that, you know, you get in on those before the kind of market shifts to that card, because I do think the one thing I feel is better about Spirit Dancer is that it would stick a little bit harder because of Daybreak Coronet having a more recent kind of substantial reprint in a master set, and Core Spirit Dancer kind of sitting around with basically like not a real like substantial reprint. I mean, like I said, it had the anthology. Yeah, I like non-foils, but foils, I mean, if you can get a deal on them, I do think will sell fairly well. But non-foils, I do like it. It could definitely surge back into the double digits, probably in the $15 range, but maybe closer to 20, like Daybreak Coronet, because it's a key part of the deck. So I really like that. In terms of other cards we talked about Hakan, Stormgald. We talked, you know, for the Knights, we talked about Knight Exemplar a while back, or this was like last week, and I sent an email out. There was, you know, we were looking at the gods, you know, Tarkin and I, when we were just, you know, happened upon some other cards that we looked at, you know, and there is a supply glut, like Tark said. We looked at Sadissi Brood Tyrant. We looked at Omnath, Locus of Rage. I do think those are cards to, especially in foil, to document, you know, to look at and, maybe get in on some cheap copies, because I do think those cheap copies won't be around forever. And I do think, you know, as highly played commanders, they have the foils have a pretty big you know, ceiling. So that was my main cards this week was Core Spirit Dancer, We had some Dissy Brew Tyrant. We had Omnath. We have the Insider suggestion of Hakan Stormgald. I really like. And
really quick. I just want. I guess apparently Chains of Mephistos is now $800.
Yeah, so. Chains got a really big buyout, and I don't know if it's going to stick at that price, but it's definitely a significant increase, no matter what.
Yeah,
definitely a significant increase. I also wanted to look at. I have a lot of cards this week. Wow. Uriel the Mistalker. I kind of feel like this card has done nothing but increase since like 5 years ago and has not seen a substantial reprint. I just wanted to double check because I don't think this card was reprinted.
I don't think so either.
And it's a $20 foil nearly, but like a $6 non-foil. Let me see. Yeah, it's about $6. I mean, I think that's due for an increase, especially with all the the hype around Boggles, the hype around Multicolor Legends. So yeah, I think that's about it. I also had a reserve list card I was looking at.
Yeah, and, bring it on.
It's a card that I've played for a very long time. I think has always been a really interesting card. It's Heart of Yavimaya.
Ooh yeah.
And I think pretty much any reserve list land that's like under $5 is pretty much a buy. I mean, most reserve list cards like that are buy, but I can't believe this card has been so low for so long. It's really not.
It's like the Green really Lake of the terrible. Dead.
Yeah.
Like, right? Yeah.
Kind of, not really, but it's not that good.
I know it doesn't do the same thing.
It's not that good, but.
It's the same set. I think that was like that Green Land, right? From.
Yeah, I've always really liked that card, and I saw it pop up on Interest a few times. It is from Alliances, but I didn't want to be like. I didn't want to not talk about it, especially because I love the card. But it has jumped pretty hard in the last 6 months. That is definitely true. But it's still at a price point that is pretty comfortable. I mean, $2, even up from like 30 cents. I mean, this was under a dollar. But even still, I think this is a pretty good card to be holding, like any reserveless card.
With that, I got to go, Chaz.
All right, Tark. We will see you next time. I'm going to wrap it up with one more card. And only because I saw Blade of Selves increase so much that I like Masterwork of Ingenuity. I saw that card increase a lot. Not a lot, like in terms of percentages, but it has shown up on Interest a few times. And I liked the card a while ago. I think I talked about that card. But yeah, Masterwork of Ingenuity, I also think is it's time to revisit that card as well because it's a very powerful card. It's been increasing pretty steadily. And while it's not Blade of Selves in terms of the power level, I mean, it really can be. I mean, it can be anything. So, yeah. All right, folks, that is going awesome. To wrap it up for this week. You can find me on the QS Insider Discord. That's the best way to find me. Tark, where can they find you?
Yeah, I'm at @_Tark on Twitter. I also have the guys over at the Facebook, MTG Finance Central Facebook page. You can chat with me there. And as always, QS.
All right. Yeah, that's going to do it today, folks. Thanks for joining us. We will see you next time. It's going to be the QS cast signing out.
Ciao.
Later. At the